celebrating 30 years on Utah's airwaves.
Western Life Radio thanks you for joining us around the campfire and for your ongoing support to Utah's longest-running home, garden, travel, and outdoor adventure program. You can always join us on our online campsite at westernliferadio.com.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then,
hey!
The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE. Discover the magic within Utah State Parks with an annual State Parks Pass. From boating and fishing to hiking, camping, and off-highway vehicle adventures, Utah State Parks offers a wide variety of activities in the great outdoors. An annual State Park Pass opens the gate to year-round adventures at an amazing price. The annual State Park Pass provides day-use access for you and your family. In addition, Utah State Parks opens the gate to cultural and historical parks where you can learn more about Utah's rich heritage. And don't forget to reserve your favorite campsites year-round with options in teepees, yurts, and hammocks in addition to the standard tent and RV options. Visit the trailhead for more information at stateparks.utah.gov.
I'm Governor Spencer Cox. We live in an incredible state, and this time of year, my family and I, we love to ride. Unfortunately, we've had too many fatalities this year, and while safety equipment is critical, it's not enough. Remember to always be aware of your surroundings and never ride beyond your capabilities. We want to make sure that you make it home safe. And never forget, nobody is invincible.
Faster Utah is proactive about school safety. For more information, fasterutah.org.
Spring is fast approaching, and Sportsman's Warehouse shares your passion for hiking, fishing, camping, and hunting. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. Sportsman's Warehouse has the latest in fishing to help you catch the big ones as the ice melts, or get above the inversion with new hiking boots. Their experts combined with a terrific selection truly makes Sportsman's Warehouse the great indoors for those that love the great outdoors. Utah born and Utah proud, Sportsman's Warehouse, take it outside.
Play safe on the water. In Utah, youth 12 to 17 must pass an approved safety class prior to operating personal watercraft on Utah waters. Classes are offered statewide. Register now or get more information by calling 801-538-BOAT. Visit stateparks.utah.gov. This message brought to you by the Utah State Parks Boating Program.
Kindness. It's a single smile, a thoughtful word, a small, unexpected gesture, Whatever the act may be, it's something we call kindness. Yet sometimes in such a chaotic world, people forget the power that kindness holds. Kindness can brighten a moment, lift someone's spirits, turn a bad day into a good story. Kindness can make someone's week, or month, or year. Kindness can restore faith in humanity, and some say it can even make us healthier. All with a simple, small, perhaps unseen or anonymous act. So, think about this. What would happen if a small act of kindness sparked another small act of kindness, and then another, and another, and another? What if kindness became contagious, and all the small gestures done by many would make an impact felt around the nation, around the world? Imagine that power. And all it takes is one kind act a day.
Richter joins us once again in the garden with Richter's Herbs. Thank you again for taking a few minutes with us today.
Always a pleasure to join you.
Another fun way to play with an herb element to your garden is having a theme. We've talked before in years past about having a root beer garden, where you'd have multiple types of herbs that could be used in a root beer beverage of some sort.
Oh, yeah. There are untold numbers of themes that one could develop in your garden. So yes, a root beer garden for sure. There's all kinds of herbs that you could grow to develop your own beverages of all sorts. I mean, you know, when you think of something like beer, you know, it's been around for more than 1,000 years, and we always think of hops as the thing that must be in beer. But it wasn't always that way. Hops came along a little later. There were other herbs that were used, things like mugwort and others that were used to make beers years and years ago. The monasteries made them from things straight out of the what they call the apothecary's garden, the herb garden that was on the monastery. The only reason why hops ended up becoming the herb for beer was because hop is an incredibly effective antibiotic herb. So the monks found that when they threw hops, in this case, hops just grew as a wild plant. They threw some of that in their beer vats, along with mugwort and various other herbs. They found that the beer would last a lot longer. It would last months and months longer because of what we now know to be the disinfectant properties of hops. But what that story tells you is that there are still many other herbs out there that can be used to make interesting beverages that have medicinal or just pure enjoyment value.
And it's funny you say hops. We have hops. We personally don't brew our own beer or anything, but they're magical to me. I love the fragrances of them. And ours are just coming up. They're about a foot long right now outside. They're starting to run, and they're already getting ready to go. We planted those shortly after we did an interview with you when it was Herb of the Year. And, man, they're just so much fun, and I love just to put them in water, make a little hop water. You know, you throw a couple of those in there and a couple of things of mint in there. What a refreshing summer beverage.
Yeah, and people, when you think of that crazy, unstructured cottage garden idea, well, people would take a hops and grow it over a trellis, for example, and in a way that you can sit under it and enjoy the shade from it. Because it will form a really dense shade if allowed to grow over an area like that. So there's so much you can do in creative ways, and you don't have to think of hops as when you look at a picture, you see a commercial hop plantation, they grow the hops straight up a pole or a rope, oftentimes 30 feet high. So is that the only way to grow hops? No, not at all. You can grow hops along a fence. You can grow hops on a trellis. You can create that shaded space. And then in the middle of summer, just sitting under that, I bet you more often than not, you actually fall asleep nicely because hops is also a little bit of a sudorific herb. It's a calming herb. In fact, I think you know, Brian, that some people put a few hop figs or hop leaves in their pillows in order to help them to go to sleep.
I've done that, actually, and it works. It's very calming. I love the scent of it. It has kind of a pine smell, a little bit of a citrusy note to it. Yeah. Depending on which variety you get, they have such a heavenly smell, and you just want to breathe deep and enjoy it and just fall asleep.
That's right. So I just love that picture of growing hops in that unconventional way. That's exactly what I'm trying to get across here today.
Magical. Again, so many different options available. I love browsing your catalog for ideas. Plenty of places to peek at. I know you have books, and if people are too excited and they don't want to wait to actually harvest their own, I know you also have the dried herbs in many cases available too.
That's right. Yes, sir, of course. We're trying to cover herbs and all the different ways that people engage with them. So, of course, people want to grow them from seeds, and others don't want to bother with the seeds, so they buy the plants. And then those who don't want to bother with any growing, and we have the dried herbs as well, and even the essential oils. So lots of options how to bring herbs into your lives.
Again, where do they go for more information?
Go to richters.com. That's richters.com.
What was the first herb that you personally became very excited about?
Without a doubt, it was lemon verbena. Lemon verbena is still one of my favorite herbs of all. I just can't get enough of the scent. It's a herb from Chile, South America. It's not hardy through most of North America, but it does well in containers and pots, and many people are successful in overwintering it as a dormant herb over the winter months. But then during the summer, you get this fresh flush of these intensely fragrant leaves. And it's a different lemon scent. It's a lemon scent. When you think of a lemon, you know, everyone knows what lemon smells like. They know what a lemon peel smells like, which is a beautiful smell. But lemon verbena adds something to it. When you analyze what we call the essential oils, that's the component of leaves that gives it its scent and its flavor. When you analyze those oils, you find that there are those elements in the oil. So there's just a hint of these other fragrances in that oil that just adds to the richness. I just love it. And lemon verbena is fantastic in tea. I don't generally recommend it just by itself as a tea. I love to add it to other teas for the flavor. So that, hands down, is probably one of my top 10 herbs for sure. And certainly was my first herb that I fell in love with.
How do you typically start it? Is it best from plants? Is it best from seeds?
You can't get seeds. It does occasionally produce seeds, but it's one of these herbs that we just never see seeds on the market anywhere. So it's always propagated by cuttings, so vegetatively. And it's a little tricky at first. The leaves are a bit sensitive. If they dry out too much, you can lose the cuttings quickly. So you have to give them a fairly high humidity environment. So what we like to do is cover them up with some kind of a plastic tent or even a clear plastic cup or something over the cuttings to keep the humidity up a little bit. Once they get through the initial stages of producing the roots, then you can take that cover off, and then they'll find after that. From there on, they're pretty easy to grow. But that initial rooting stage, you have to pay a little bit of extra attention to.
And that attention to detail is something actually that Richter's is very good at. I know for personal experience that there are many different types of mints. In fact, there's many different flavors. If you look at a chocolate mint from two or three different suppliers, they're all different. based on what they do for their cuttings or where they get their source from, I know you are particularly good at getting some of the best flavored products out there, and that's what you replicate and sell.
Well, our industry, I'm talking about the horticulture industry, producing plants for the garden, has changed enormously in the years that we've been in business. And today, most herbs that are not produced from seeds are produced from cuttings that are imported from other places. There are a lot of it coming from Central America, some of it coming from the Middle East, from Israel, for instance, and also even from Africa. And so these cuttings are coming in, and we have seen it, that some of these varieties get mixed up. And it's a funny thing because we'll see many people growing a certain herb with a certain name, and we know it's all wrong. And it's just so funny that people are accusing us of having the mislabeled variety. But what we do is we maintain stock plants in our greenhouses, which is not a trivial thing. First of all, it takes up a lot of your space. So what we're doing is we're keeping mother plants in greenhouses. We're heating them for the sole purpose of taking cuttings. But what that does for us is that we know what we're taking our cuttings from. We know that this plant, this mint or this bergamot or this thyme is correct. It's correctly labeled, and when we take cuttings from that, we're going to have the correct variety. In many cases, it's not a big deal because it's easy to tell one cutting from another of, say, lemon balm and catnip. But when it gets into things like lavenders and mints, man, you can get easily very mixed up. And you won't know until, say, in the case of lavender, until the plant actually comes to bloom. And we've seen it. We've seen the plant that's supposed to be, say, purple, turned out to be white or vice versa. And it's a common problem. So that is a key difference, what we do, that most of the nurseries don't do. Because you think about it, when you're devoting a whole greenhouse or more just for the purpose of producing cuttings, think of the heating and all the care of those plants and all that goes through the entire year. But we do it because we're committed to that.
And that's where quality stands, and that's why you've got the reputation you have for so many years, too. I mean, you've been around for a long time. There's no accident to that.
That's right, yeah. We're now more than 50 years doing herbs.
And again, the quality, the flavors are there within those things. I mean, I've tasted some chocolate mints from different places, and I don't think it was just a simple mix-up even. I think it was just the quality. I mean, they're just a richer, more resonating flavor with many of the ones we've picked up from you over the years.
There are a lot of herbs that, if you want to speak of it from a scientific or a botanical sense, variety A is botanically identical to variety B, but the difference in the scents and the flavors can be massively different. It could be massive, actually. And so when we select an item for our lineup, we make sure that the variety is significant. It's something that we think our customers would like and people would like to grow, that there's some value to it. Instead of just grabbing any variety that somebody else happens to be growing, we're making sure that the variety is actually worth growing. It has a good scent. It has a good flavor. And if it doesn't, we don't offer it.
And I think that's exactly why you have the reputation you have. People know that they can get something of quality from you.
Yeah.
Again, lots of different opportunities here to purchase some fantastic herbs over the course of the year. Now is a really good time to get started.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
What other tips do you have for beginning growers? We know there's no rules here. You make your own rules. What other tips do you have for growers that would be interested in bringing herbs into their growing space this year?
Well, many people have a personal favorite scent, and they're often surprised to learn that that scent reappears in multiple places in the plant kingdom. We spoke about lemon verbena, and of course the lemon. Well, those aren't the only two plants that have a lemon scent. There are many, many other plants out there that also have scents that are close to lemon or actually almost bang on lemon. So, for example, there are multiple varieties of lemon thyme. And incidentally, lemon thymes in particular, and we've talked about this in the past, but lemon thymes in particular are good for repelling mosquitoes. Now, they're not going to get rid of your mosquitoes on a bad mosquito night, but they might make mosquitoes a little less prevalent as you walk around the garden and you brush against the thyme or step on some thyme and you release the oils to the air. And those oils, the mosquitoes don't like, and they fly away. So you find the lemon scent in thyme, you find it in basil, you find it even in catnip of all herbs. You find it in geraniums, and you find it all over the place. So if you have a fixation on rose scents, you can find all kinds of rose-scented herbs, like rose-scented geraniums or rose-scented bergamots, even a rose-scented thyme, for instance, or orange scent, or on and on. You could create a theme just on the basis of scent.
That you can. And that's the one thing I love about it, too, because obviously where we are in most of Utah, citrus trees don't exactly thrive here in this environment unless you have a greenhouse that's heated throughout the winter. But you still can get those flavor notes for your culinary needs with different combinations of these herbs.
Well, yeah, and for example, teas. You could use a dried orange, lemon peel in your tea mix. That certainly is something worth doing. But it's very different than a lemon balm or a lemon verbena or a lemon thyme, putting that into a tea. So you get a citrus in a way that citrus itself can't really give you in a way. So it's very interesting that way.
Any other tips or suggestions for folks out there?
Well, I just say just be brave about it. About starting a garden. If you've never started a garden, just don't be afraid to order something that you're not familiar with, or maybe you've heard about and you've never grown before, you don't really know how to grow it. Don't be afraid to grow it, to order it, and try it out in your garden. And the real gardeners know that not everything's going to thrive in their particular garden. And it's a question of trial and error. And so if you allow yourself to order things that you're not sure whether they grow or whether they're right for your garden, a real gardener would not be afraid to try those things, see if they grow. If they don't grow, well, okay, that's fine. But more often than not, they'll find a way to make that particular plant, in this case herbs, thrive in their garden somewhere. If it has to be in a pot, in a container, or if it can be in the garden, in the ground, or it could be in a hanging basket or whatever, they'll find a way to make it work.
That's the key. And we've used this terminology before, but it's like an adventure. You know, it's a backyard adventure. Travel costs are going up this year again with the fuel prices going crazy. Maybe your adventure's in your backyard this year. You have access to seeds from around the world, plants from around the world. Introduce those to your backyard and then enjoy that adventure this summer from your own backyard.
Yes, it's so right. I agree with that completely. I think it's just a question of people just opening up to the idea of all these interesting exotic plants in the garden and then developing the relationship with them.
And a little side note from the herbs, you also have the Seed Zoo, which, again, you have your seed explorers going throughout the world gathering seeds for your backyard.
Yeah, we started that quite a few years ago, and the general idea is that there are specific cultivars, specific varieties that are not currently available to North American gardeners, but are traditionally grown in different parts of the world. Could be Africa, could be India, could be anywhere. And there's interest in those. And so we started Seed Zoo, where essentially plant explorers would go and discover these plants. Maybe in those local areas, they're well known, but they're not well known here in North America. And sometimes they just bring a handful of seeds back. And we would make those seeds available on a one-off basis. As soon as those seeds are gone, then that variety is no longer available. So it's a completely different way of providing seeds to gardeners. And over the years, we've brought some very interesting plants some of which maybe didn't do so well, but some have now gone on to be commercialized and are doing very well. When I say commercialized now, they're actually being cultivated for seeds and being sold to catalogs now. So I find that very exciting, that some of these varieties ultimately ended up being very valuable, very interesting to people.
Again, if folks want to find some of these seeds in the Seed Zoo, if they want to find some of the seeds or the plants available from Richter's Herbs, where do they go?
Well, for that, you have to go to the website, because this is strictly a web offering. It's not in our catalog, let's say our paper catalog or a downloadable catalog. It's only available on our website. Because of the nature of these seeds, as soon as the seeds are exhausted, the item is removed from the website. So if you want, just go to our Richter's website and click on the link to Seed Zoo.
Fantastic. Anything else you'd like to share with folks out there?
Well, we're constantly adding and evaluating new plants and new seeds for the catalog. And I think over the next few weeks, we're hoping to add at least about a half dozen new veggies, some from southern Italy, for instance. And we've already added a few traditional Chinese herbs that probably most people have never heard of before. But I'm excited about them because they offer some interesting properties for the control of inflammation and even for memory loss and that sort of stuff. These are herbs that have been traditionally used in that part of the world for those purposes. So we're constantly adding new things to our catalog. So for those who are experienced gardeners and want to try something even a little more out there, we've got those too. We got you covered as well.
Fantastic. Mr. Conrad Richter joining us once again from the garden with Richter's Herbs. Thank you again for taking a few minutes with us today. Have a great spring.
Oh, thank you very much, and all the best to all of the listeners.
Explore the universe from one of Utah's dark sky parks. With more than 14 state park destinations to choose from, your family can gaze at the Milky Way, watch the moonrise, or make a wish during a meteor shower. With the right telescope, you can find nearby planets, tour distant galaxies, or capture the heavens with your own deep space photography. Your adventure begins with a camping reservation and a clear view to the darkened skies. Launch your epic nighttime adventure at stateparks.utah.gov.
Don't let your next family outing end in tragedy. Don't drink and ride. Driving an OHV under the influence of alcohol is no different than driving your car under the influence of alcohol. Law enforcement officers will be out checking riders and operators of OHVs. You could end up seeing jail time, loss of driver's license, the same stiff penalties that apply to operating a car. This message is from the Utah Division of Parks and Recreation. Ride responsibly.
Connect with the world through Rise Broadband and stay in touch with all things important to you and your family. Known as the number one fixed wireless internet provider in the United States, Rise Broadband will keep you connected with work, school, shopping, and entertainment. Whether you live in a suburban or rural area, Rise helps keep you and your family connected with the people and things that you value most. Rise Broadband offers flexible packages designed to meet your budget so you can enjoy all your favorite music and movies with fast, reliable, in-home Wi-Fi. Stream your favorite shows, play the hottest games without buffering, and stay in touch with family and friends. Get more for less with Rise Broadband. To check availability in your area, visit risebroadband.com or call 844-411-RISE.
Put on your helmet. Let's go.
But, Mom, when will I be old enough so I don't have to wear my helmet? When will I become invincible just like you?
Sweetie, I'm not invincible. I need my helmet too. Anyone can get hurt, no matter how old they are.
Be responsible and set an example when you ride. Accidents do happen. Please remember, nobody is invincible.
Choose your adventure. With 46 state parks and an impressive list of recreational opportunities,
yes, bass fishing at Sand Hollow State Park.
Visitors might have a hard time choosing what to do each weekend.
Woo! Windsurfing at Deer Creek State Park.
Choose your adventure. Explore Utah and create memories at Utah State Parks. For campground reservations, ideas for your next adventure, or to purchase an annual pass, stop by stateparks.utah.gov.
Play safe. Boating accidents happen quickly. You never know when you might end up in the water. Wear your life jacket and have a throwable life preserver on board. Remember, Utah boaters wear it. Call 801-538-BOAT. Visit stateparks.utah.gov. This message brought to you by the Utah State Parks Boating Program.
Spring is fast approaching, and Sportsman's Warehouse shares your passion for hiking, fishing, camping, and hunting. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. Sportsman's Warehouse has the latest in fishing to help you catch the big ones as the ice melts, or get above the inversion with new hiking boots. Their experts combined with a terrific selection truly make Sportsman's Warehouse the great indoors for those that love the great outdoors. Utah born and Utah proud, Sportsman's Warehouse, take it outside.
When you look at the number of disasters in the U.S., chances are every area will deal with some kind of emergency in the next decade. And between school, sports, and social lives, chances are you won't be with your kids when it happens. Will they know what to do? Ready.gov/kids has the educational tools and information to make the conversation easy. When the time comes, chances are they'll feel prepared, not scared. So talk with your family today.
Now back to Western Life Radio with your host, Brian Brinkerhoff.
Alex Grover joins us once again with Utah's Best Gardening. Thank you for taking time with us.
Hey, I love coming out and visiting everyone in Radio Land.
Coddling moth. It's getting close to being that time to start taking care of them.
Yeah, Southern Utah is already on a treatment schedule. I am waiting with bated breath for Northern Utah. I haven't had too much problems with coddling moth on the few apples I've got. So we'll see if I want to treat this year. But I am tracking it. Because of the earliness of the season, we may get three generations this year. It really depends on how quickly fall comes, but if we have a normal year, it could go either two generations or three generations. If we have an Indian summer of any length, I think we'll hit three generations. So we're going to have to look at extra spraying. Now, everyone wants to know exactly when to spray. And what I tell them is go to USU, get on their Utah Tree IPM advisory, and I actually don't have this right now, but I usually get both the commercial one and the homeowner one because each one does have different information. The commercial one will tell you exactly when things are happening, how many sprays you'll need with various chemicals. The homeowner one tells you what to spray and just says, spray every 2 weeks from this date to this date, or spray every week from this date to this date, or spray every 5 to 7 days from this date to this date, which is a lot of spraying, and I'm lazy, but it gives me a different viewpoint. Either way, they do tend to have a lot of jargon in them, so use your Google click and Google some definitions to help you get through it. When they say start spraying, you start spraying. I have worked in a lot of different facets, including at times spraying my father-in-law's trees. I don't have time for it now. I'm behind on pruning at his place. He's so forgiving of me. But I have sprayed in various places, and it is perfectly doable to do a coddling moth spray organically. For each generation, there's certain things you're going to need to do. For your first generation, you can use a horticultural oil or something like organicide that's just an organic horticultural oil. Literally, it's made out of sesame seed oil and fish oil. It smells like stale fish and chips.
There you go.
So you can eat the same day. At least the package used to say you could eat the same day. I'm not sure that's still the case. But it's very safe. It's very easy to break down the environment. And for the first spray, for the first generation, you can use that. Now, to get really, really good kill on them, you need to spray every 5 to 7 days. Now, if you are very tied up in your time and just don't think you can do it every 5 to 7 days, if you do it every 10 to 14 days, you're not going to have 100%, but you're still going to have relatively good success. Now, to get your apples, you have to remember, though, is you're going to have at least 2 generations in Utah. Since I've been tracking, they've never had less. I won't say it can't happen, but like I say, this year we're looking at 3 generations. So you'll need to get the second and possibly the third generation sprayed. Horticultural oil is currently, with the exception of organicide, is currently not listed for anything but the first generation. I don't know why that is. I'm sure there's a reason. I would love to know why. If any of the listeners out there know, get a hold of Brian, let me know, and I will do more research. It didn't used to be that way. When I started spraying fruit trees, it didn't used to be that way. But I'll go in the second. And the second generation, again, if you're using a heavy chemical, you can go 2 weeks or more, depending on what the label says, and that's fine. If you're using organic, usually it's 5 to 7 days. That seems to be fairly regular. But if you're organic spraying, you can use spinosad, as long as it's labeled organic. You can use organic BT, and you can use Pyganic. Any one of those three will do it. And I recommend changing those from year to year to year, because each one of those is a very distinctly different type of chemical. In the case of BT, it's not even a chemical, it's a microbe. Doesn't affect humans, by the way. Doesn't affect humans, I have to say that. And so by switching those out year after year after year, you cut down on the ability of bugs to gain a resistance to it. Now, horticultural oil does not have that problem because in the over 100 years it's been used, nobody's documented any insects that have adapted to it. Horticultural oil is not a poison in the sense of you ingest it and you die. Horticultural oil mechanically plugs up the breathing pores of many small soft-bodied insects, thereby just literally killing them through suffocation. And so far, nothing has come through and gained a resistance that it didn't already have to that. It's a great product. And especially if you, again, if you use organicide, horticultural oil does have limits on how often you can spray it, how much you can put down per acre. That might be part of the limitation. They started looking at it going, well, gee, we can't spray this more than for the first generation, or we'll have too much. That might be it. I don't know. Again, organicide does not have that stipulation last time I read the label. Again, I'm talking about the label here. It's very important to remember the label is the law, and people miss it. I had a guy on Facebook that was like, oh, I don't see any law for the blah, blah, blah. Well, if you check the law, the label is literally the law on it. And if you use one of these and the government for any reason wants to come after you, yeah, they can get you. Usually they don't do that unless you do something stupid like kill a bunch of bees on a tree that's flowering, or in the case of a rodenticide about 12 or 13 years ago, a couple girls died because it was used inappropriately, not in accordance with the label. Yeah, they'll come after you. But if you're following the label, there's nothing to come after you for. And there's always that guy, Cousin Eddie down the street, who thinks that he knows better. Yeah, they do a lot of damage.
Unfortunately. Don't need to read the rules or something. Don't need to read the directions.
Seeing people use something on a ditch bank, there are things that are okay to use on a ditch bank because the label says they're okay. It's been tested, and it washes down and kills everything down the ditch for a couple miles. It happens more often than you realize. Don't be that guy.
Years ago when I was growing up in Lehigh, there's a little creek that goes through there, and I used to fish it all the time. It's called Dry Creek. And
you found fish in Dry Creek?
Oh, yeah. There were lots of little fish in there, little browns in there. I caught some bigger ones in there, too. And one time I was fishing there, and there's all these fish bellied up. And somebody sprayed something along the banks and killed all the fish. And Wildlife Resources, we reported it to them. We gave them some samples of the fish, and they did a little research, and they figured out who was involved. And just because it says it's for plants doesn't mean it doesn't hurt other things. It could hurt the bees, like you said. It could hurt other things. So,
most pesticides are listed as being toxic to fish and aquatic critters. They are fairly clearly marked. Got to read the label, folks. Got to read the label. And again, if you don't, you know, last year I had a situation where I had to do some mosquito abatement on one of our properties. And I actually didn't purchase the product. It had been purchased by my predecessor, and I looked at it and decided I was going to use it. And we had some animals die. I think it was lack of oxygen because of the way the patterns on what died where, because it was an oil and it can do it. And the label says that there is a possibility of some death, and that's fairly normal when you're using a product like that. And it was a horticultural oil that was labeled for what I was using it for. If I had used that off-label, if I had not read the label and known what was on it, we could have had a bad situation. Of course, I went up, I talked to the people, I explained to them what was going on, explained that it was labeled for it, and that it was, in fact, what was used by the contractor last year. Because there was at least a residue that's identifiable, and it was a bit of a struggle, but they said, okay, this guy obviously knows what he's doing. And that saved my bacon, to be honest. I mean, again, I used it appropriately, and by label, yes, there are going to be some deaths, which is disturbing, but it was not actually a major incident. But again, I used it correctly. There just happened to be a few casualties that time. We did have to get that cleaned up, but once it did, there was no long-term effect.
Even when you do it entirely right, there still can be challenges, but unfortunately, there's a lot of folks out there that just don't read the directions, you know. They know better.
Of course, the other thing, too, is there could have been other things that came into the system that we didn't know about. Sometimes you have timing that is just coincidental. But I'm the one that they see.
You're the guy.
that is a possibility. I just cannot prove or disprove it. But I did notice that the further downstream I went, the fewer problems there were with anything that died. And that's an indication, because I treated the whole area. That is an indication that there may have been an outside contaminant. But again, I can't prove it. But we did take the water in and tried to get it tested as much as we could and trying to figure out what we needed to test for. That was kind of interesting. And they still got their fish this year. I don't think it's a problem.
Again, it's time to plant a lot of those warmer season crops. Time to get corn started soon. And in some places, we're still seeing some frost every once in a while. But if you know your area and you can predict a little bit ahead, a lot of people can start getting their stuff in the ground.
Yeah, I've got my, did we already talk about this? I put in my tomatoes, they died. Yeah, I did talk about that. It happened before the cold weather. So just no matter what, always keep a little bit of reserves. So if something goes bad, you'll have something to cover yourself with. Keep a little bit back so you can go buy some replacement tomatoes or whatever you need, because it's a natural system. It's not going to be 100%. There are going to be issues. There are going to be problems. And it is just better to have a little bit set aside for you.
Good advice. And again, if you're going to be planting, plant on the right days. Again, that'll make a difference. Make sure you water them. You're going to have to take a little extra care of those specific plants.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of planting your own food, no matter what the conditions. Again, my lawn will suffer. There are a lot of things I'll let suffer, but I'm going to have a vegetable garden. I'm going to have some fruit. And from a nutrition standpoint, I like the fruit, not because it's got the most vitamins and minerals, but because it's got, we call them clean calories. Now, that's totally bogus scientifically, but what it comes down to is if I eat 12 grams of sugar in candy, that's not good for my system. If I eat 12 grams of sugar in the form of fruit, the fruit slows down the absorption, changes a lot of stuff. The calorie is still a calorie, but if it absorbs slowly, then you're not craving other calories. And so for my money, getting my fruit crop is actually really, really important because those are calories that I can rely on and can actually feel really safe about them health-wise. Does that mean I should give up my broccoli, my kale, and my collards and whatnot? No, by all means, use those. But if you don't have the calories, then your body can't do much with the other nutrients. So my fruit is important.
There's a little extra pride, too, when you grow your own produce, when you fight the elements, when you get something at the end of the season. It might not be always the prettiest fruit on the planet, but it's yours. And you know what it went through. You know what went into it, what was sprayed on it. You know what wasn't sprayed on it. And it always tastes better, no matter what it looks like.
Yeah. I grew up, and when we got peaches, it was usually from a fruit stand where it was a couple hours away from being picked. You lived in the same world I did, literally. That's how we grew up. I dare you to go find a good, not even a great, but a good supermarket peach. Go ahead, try and find one. Prove me wrong. Love for you to prove me wrong. I'm not going to say they're not out there. They might be, but it is really hard to get a peach at a supermarket that is actually ripe because they pick them on the tree. They've got to transport them. They pick them early. They need them to not be ultra soft because a ripe peach is ultra soft. So, again, they're going to pick them early because that's how they get a peach that they can ship from California. Compare that to going out and gently holding on to the peach on your tree, gently twisting it to see if the stem will release, and eating it right there. Huge difference. World of difference. A perfectly ripe peach eaten straight off the tree or taken into the house and throw some half and half on it. You cannot do that.
Kindness. It's a single smile, a thoughtful word, a small, unexpected gesture. Whatever the act may be, it's something we call kindness. Yet sometimes in such a chaotic world, people forget the power that kindness holds. Kindness can brighten a moment, lift someone's spirits, turn a bad day into a good story. Kindness can make someone's week, or month, or year. Kindness can restore faith in humanity, and some say it can even make us healthier, all with a simple, small, perhaps unseen or anonymous act. So, think about this. What would happen if a small act of kindness sparked another small act of kindness, and then another, and another, and another? What if kindness became contagious? And all the small gestures done by many would make an impact felt around the nation, around the world. Imagine that power. And all it takes is one kind act a day.
Lake Powell's a unique fishery, offering incredible fishing opportunities. We're taking a look at what makes this water special next on Western Life Radio. Spring is fast approaching, and Sportsman's Warehouse shares your passion for hiking, fishing, camping, and hunting. If you want to feel at one with nature, this is the place to gear up. Sportsman's Warehouse has the latest in fishing to help you catch the big ones as the ice melts, or get above the inversion with new hiking boots. Their experts combined with a terrific selection truly make Sportsman's Warehouse the great indoors for those that love the great outdoors. Utah born and Utah proud, Sportsman's Warehouse, take it outside.
If you would like a little more from your range experience than standing and shooting holes in paper, come and train with us, TaylorGunsmithing.com.
Get online, on board, and on track with Utah State Parks online education for OHVs and PWCs. OHV education is required for youth aged to 15, and PWC education is required for youth aged 12 to 17. Utah's personal watercraft and off-highway vehicle youth education programs required by law are now online at www.stateparks.utah.gov.
Few waters offer the unique opportunities that Lake Powell can. Wayne Gustavison with the Utah Division of Wildlife Resources hooks into a healthy striper.
There's not many other lakes in the world that have the excess fish, the big body of water, and the distance required. You know, we really don't have that many fishermen that can make it to the second largest man-made reservoir in the United States. So we have a supply that we can share and be very liberal with. So it's worked out very well, and we're keeping the populations in balance, and that's all I'm trying to do with the reports, is just do my job. Try to keep the fish working the way they should, and if that happens, why, fishing is good for everybody that enjoys it. And of course, when you come to Lake Powell, you can look up every once in a while and say, wow, this place is really pretty. And it keeps changing. You know, some things work year after year, but every once in a while, okay, we've got a new bait here, we try that, and oh yeah, it does work pretty well in this condition, this spot. And so you can put that information out. Yeah, if you're fishing for bass along the shoreline in turbid water, why, the Bomber A is working pretty good this week. Just cast it out, reel it in. And then the next week, okay, we're doing really well on single-tailed grubs in pumpkin color.
Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff. Explore the universe from one of Utah's dark sky parks. With more than 14 state park destinations to choose from, your family can gaze at the Milky Way, watch the moonrise, or make a wish during a meteor shower. With the right telescope, you can find nearby planets, tour distant galaxies, or capture the heavens with your own deep space photography. Your adventure begins with a camping reservation and a clear view to the darkened skies. Launch your epic nighttime adventure at stateparks.utah.gov.
Less travel, exploring the woodlands, the red rocks and streams. He's sharing his campfire from season to season. New places and people with stories and dreams. Through cadence essence of nature, the wilderness beckons. A song of the mountains rings out through the trees. The voice of the backcountry echoes forever. It carries the message, live wild and free. Wild and free. The song of the mountains is calling to me. Western wildlands, discover the backcountry dream.
Folks, you've been listening to Western Life Radio, a 30-year outdoor and Western lifestyle tradition. Thanks for joining us. May all your days be filled with new adventures. I'm Brian Brinkerhoff.